Leading Ideas Talks is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leading ideas. Leading Ideas Talks is also brought to you by Changes Congregations Face. This adult leadership study curriculum from the Lewis Center is an ideal conversation starter for your small groups, especially for congregations evaluating their own ministries or engaging and planning for the future. Changes Congregations Face is only $3.99 at churchleadership.com/studies. What can online faith communities teach us about people's need for interaction and authentic relationships? In this episode, we speak with Heidi Campbell, who has studied online churches since the early days of the internet. She shares key learnings emerging from the experience of so many churches that moved worship online during the pandemic.
Welcome to Leading Ideas Talks, a podcast featuring thought leaders and innovative practitioners. I'm Douglas Poe, the director of the Lewis Center, and your host for this talk. Joining me is the Reverend Dr. Heidi Campbell, professor of communications at Texas A&M. She just edited a free ebook resource entitled The Distance Church, Reflections on Doing Church Online. Our focus for this podcast is rethinking virtual community. Heidi's work is at the cross-section of religion, theology, and communication, and in particular, digital communication. Her first book was Exploring Religious Community Online. I share this with you all so you can get a sense of how long she's been thinking about the digital community. Heidi, thank you for joining us and for your work in this area over the number of years.
Thank you for having me.
I would like to begin our conversation by asking, can you share the background on how the latest ebook, the free resource, The Distance Church, came into being and why you wanted to get this free resource out to individuals?
So I've been studying the intersection between new media, religion, and digital culture for almost 25 years. So it's always on the forefront of my mind, you know, what's happening, especially with the church and technology. And in February, March, I found myself in Germany working at a research institute while I was on my sabbatical. And so we started hearing about the pandemic. And I have a lot of people that I follow, you know, on Facebook, and especially I kind of like to tune in every once in a while to my Facebook feed on a Sunday and just see how people are doing online church services. So I was really surprised, you know, at the beginning of March, on a typical Sunday, there were maybe five or six of my network will be doing an online church service. But that middle week, the 14th, 15th, 16th, of March, when kind of the pandemic really hit Europe and North America really hard, I suddenly saw 20 plus church services pop up on my feed, and with each Sunday, them growing more and more. So as someone I felt we were in a very important and interesting moment, especially when I noticed some of the people that were adopting digital technology and trying to do church online were people that maybe a year previously or would have been kind of critical about doing using technology in the church. But, you know, a year ago they were saying, you know, the church is, and technology are kind of at war with each other, or it's a kind of seen in an adversarial road. And now it's suddenly a gift from God. So I really felt it was important to kind of capture what was happening, both from a researcher perspective like myself and from the pastors that were out there and trying to make these choices, many of them for the very first time, about, you know, what technology do we use? So very practical questions, as well as like, how is this going to change how we do church and just how do you do church during a time of crisis? So the book was really my effort of trying to create a virtual conversation between scholars like myself who have been working in this area, saying, what can we add as far as help, advice, whether it be best practices or just theological reflection to, you know, what's happening? And then to hear from pastors and saying, what are the things that they're really struggling with during this time? So I purposely in the book picked pastors that, are in churches that are kind of 100 or less. You know, the average church in America, I believe, is about around 80, in the 80s. And so I wanted to kind of see, you know, what is the average pastor working with right now? And how are they making these choices? And so bringing those people in, as well as scholars I knew all across the world that were either theologians or media scholars that could offer this insight. And so I hope that's what the book kind of shows people, is this virtual conversation between these two groups that can learn from each other.
Thank you. I appreciate that background. And there are a couple questions that come to mind as you were talking. And I want to pick up on, you sort of shared talking about best practices and also sort of theological reflection. If you had to sort of pick one or two, and I always hate when people ask me this, but if you had to pick one or two insights you gain as you were editing the book around the theological reflection and sort of around the best practices, what would those insights be?
Well, generally speaking, you know, the pastors really kind of spoke, you know, from the heart. And we're, you know, we're looking more at, okay, what have we done? What seems to be working? What's not working? What do we wish we knew? And so, you know, the kind of main thing that came out of, especially the pastor's discourse on best practices, is the being willing to experiment and just jump in there. Churches oftentimes, when they're thinking about doing a new program or a new structure, you know, you want to get it all right. You want to get the program in place, the people in place, and then slowly roll it out, as it were, you know, and with a long time running up, giving people kind of forewarning. But that's not what happened. And so most people, you know, within a matter of a couple of days, they had to figure out, you know, how to get online, you know, how to use live streaming. Is it YouTube or Zoom or Facebook the best platform? So, you know, the lesson of, like, being willing to do kind of, you know, what they call beta testing, you know, in digital culture, you know, you roll out a new program or software, you put it out there and you know it's got some kinks and some bugs, but you know that your users are going to give you feedback and that's how you're going to refine the product. So watching pastors go through that uncomfortable stage, you know, where they might put up a Facebook filter that makes them look like a rabbit whenever part of a service because they didn't realize, but being willing to kind of, you know, being willing to be kind of less polished and just run with it. And I think people really appreciated during the time, you know, this time that, you know, hey, these pastors are struggling just like us and trying to adapt and kind of trying to connect with us. And so it gave them kind of a less professional, but more kind of real feel what the church is all about. And I think for scholars, you know, the key thing was realizing that, you know, that digital culture and offline culture are really kind of interconnected. In different ways, you know, some scholars see that as a very blurred context where you really can't tell what's online and offline anymore, and others will see it more as kind of bridged or connected. But the idea is that churches need to understand digital culture, even if they are not using technology. The culture of technology is influencing how people see relationships, how they see community, how they interact. And so this became one of the things that theologians and media scholars were talking a lot about. You know, what does the church need to understand about digital culture? How might it actually benefit and help church culture? And kind of what ways might the choices, technological choices, have theological implications? So lots of interesting conversations around those areas in the book.
So I want to unpack this theological part a little bit more, particularly around community. Can you share more from your own research and just from talking with others where you believe digital culture can actually be transforming in terms of the ways that we think about community?
Yeah, so going back to, you know, I just started my research in the 1990s, and that was when, you know, online communities were found on these bulletin boards that it was like a website you'd log on to, and then, you know, it would be asynchronous texting or via email groups. So you'd email and then the group would get your comments. But so I did these studies of three kind of online communities, or they described themselves as churches, that met via email, and how they kind of began to see that as a faith community. And the interesting thing, and I talk about this in my essay in the book, is that, you know, the key things that people are looking for online as far as, you know, a community, and this is what they were saying back in 1990, they're looking for a shared faith. They're looking for people that are transparent. They're looking for what I called at the time the virtual cheers, that some place where everybody knows their name and they're glad they came, you know, from that old TV show. They're looking for intimacy and accountability. So these traits are not kind of unique to the online. These are the same things people were looking at what would want in an offline faith community, you know, connection, relationship. The surprising thing is that a lot of people were saying, I find this more online than offline. And so I think one of the things I've been doing a lot in my work is like looking at like, okay, these are the values and traits of community that people value. How can the technology facilitate that in either the way you design it or the way that you use the technology to kind of benefit the church? Is there ways that you might use or design technology that would be that would challenge or would kind of cause people to not feel in community or feel disconnected? So, you know, that's one thing I've been surprised at, that a lot of the things I said, you know, 1996 in my research or 2002 in my PhD thesis are some of the same things that are people looking for today. To seeing that, you know, people are just kind of waking up to how digital technology can both enhance community in ways that maybe isn't possible in the offline, as well as, you know, realizing that the online isn't a solution in itself. Just because you're using digital media doesn't mean you're having more interactivity or more community in your faith space.
So you talk about the basically that there's this connection between returning to your early research and finding some of the same things in people looking for community, and community basically, if you had named those characteristics, I would say that's exactly what someone coming to church in person would be seeking. So why is it then that you think people may be more comfortable, I don't know if that's the right word, sort of trying to find sort of these values or these characteristics online versus sort of going in person to try and find these same characteristics?
Well, I tell the story, and I told it in my PhD thesis, and then at the beginning of a book, Exploring Religious Community Online, of my experience of going into a service during Holy Week and going into this, you know, large church, sitting down, and, you know, going through, you know, the ritual of, you know, I think it was Maundy Thursday. And so I'm in this place filled with a lot of people on either side of me, but yet there was no space in the service to actually interact. And, you know, people at the end of the service just kind of dispersed. And so it's like, I go here, I celebrated this communal event, you know, Eucharist, you know, passing the peace, but I feel very disconnected from the people in this room. And then I walked up to the computer lab at my university, and I logged on and was doing some of the my online ethnography in an online group where we were using an early form of a chat room and talking and having a prayer meeting. And I just began to reflect, I go, wow, I know more about these people that I have never met that are on this other side of the screen and had more of an interaction than I did with these people on either side of me. And I think for me, it says two things. One, it says that, you know, there's many possibilities that sometimes, you know, either because people are introverts or just the way of the structure of kind of, you know, different programs, we don't have the space in church to build that community, and community is really focused on just, you know, the service, that digital technology can really kind of extend that from just it being a 2-hour event to church becoming a 24/7 event because of the interactivity and opportunities the internet proposes. But also one thing, I observed this, and I've heard other people, you know, talk about this in the last couple of months, that North American Christianity especially has become very event-oriented. You know, all the energy of most pastors and staffs are all spent getting that 1-hour or 2-hour service together, whether it's online or offline, and then all the programming that goes related to it. So, you know, there's so much focus on the event. It's the community. It's like community happens if you go to the Sunday school or if you choose to stop by the coffee corner or coffee hour. It's programmed in. It's not kind of something natural or something that's seen as, you know, based on communication and relationship. It's just kind of like a ticking the box of one aspect we need to have in our program. And I think a lot of people, you know, have found this out, that when they put their services online, what they actually recreated oftentimes was, you know, the televangelist broadcast kind of model. So, okay, our service is online, but our service is very kind of flat or not interactive, or people are encouraged to be kind of passive because they're just watching the church service. Whereas at least if they're in the building, there's certain kind of protocols and ways you act to engage. And so, you know, that was in some ways critiquing the technology, but actually even when they tried to change and do different things, I found in my research that it actually, that it was the church and the way the church has become structured in the over time into the 21st century. That's the problem, not necessarily, you know, the fear that people had of technology actually could be solved part of the problem that we've created in church culture in America.
I think what is interesting, and I'm going to try this out, you can shoot me down pretty quickly if you think I'm wrong. I actually believe a possibility exists that because people have had to be innovative during this time of the pandemic, when they do start in person, and I'm hoping they won't give up what they're doing online when they do the in-person, but when they do start in person, it actually may help the in-person to be more interactive and to help people to connect with each other more. Because I think your story is helpful and that you're right, that we've made these assumptions that just because we were together, we were connected. But the reality is, in many cases, people were very disconnected, especially if they weren't a part of the community. Do you have any insights in terms of how can we pay more attention to making sure those connections exist, particularly online? How do we sort of make sure that even as people may be coming by and watching us on Facebook or some other medium, that we really are trying to help them to be connected and just aren't doing like we do in person and they become disconnected from us?
So one thing I found, again, this is going back to my early research in the 1990s, is that a lot of people experiences like more depth of it, maybe kind of of communication. They're able to be have more in-depth either like Bible studies or debates about kind of interpretations of scripture online than they ever had in an offline, you know, church experience or Sunday school experience. And so a lot of the people I talked to said that, hey, we've learned ways of talking or ways of kind of facilitating conversations or even doing prayer that maybe we could actually transport into the offline context. Unfortunately, for most of them in the research, I found that the pastors just kind of, they didn't really register that. They go, well, how could you learn something authentic online and then want to bring it offline? But I think, you know, again, just people want, they don't want conversation. They want intimacy. They want a space where they can be heard. So I think, you know, there was lots of different experiments out there. One that happened in the town where I live, at a church that's not too far from where I live, where the pastor basically, they had just three components of their church service. They had a little bit of worship, someone would give an announcement, and then the pastor would do kind of a much more truncated sermon. But the idea was then everyone was put into home groups, and if you hadn't been in a home group before the pandemic, they tried to get you into one. And then the pastor would use the sermon and offer kind of questions and even little clips that those small groups could use via Zoom or even by telephone to have a conversation and process. So the kind of the technology allowed them to have some conversations that they wouldn't have been able to have because of the ban. But it also then created these opportunities where the pastor was thinking consciously, okay, how can I create not just, you know, a sermon, but actually a sermon that can be then shared and communicated and people get feedback and it actually, you know, has a life to it. And so I think, you know, there's creative ways, just the technology allows us to do certain things and certain things well. And there's, you know, certain things that, you know, can be more problematic, but it's looking at like, how can the technology encourage that conversation, communication, openness, transparency. And again, especially that sense of 24/7, communication that is transcends boundaries of geography.
Talking about transcending sort of boundaries, one of the things you can say is wonderful about virtual or online community and also can be challenging is that you can bring together people from various cultural backgrounds, very sort of different theological perspectives and all these things together in one space. Have you thought about or reflected upon, so how do you sort of navigate making sure things don't sort of explode when you're sort of bringing together a group of people who might be really diverse in a way that can sort of be engaging and helpful, but not harmful?
Well, I mean, I think anything that involves people has potential to, for both positive and for negative.
Absolutely.
You obviously can't control, you know, like anyone who has kids knows that you can't control what people are going to say or how they react. But I think that, you know, you can create environment, like whether that's in a, you know, a school classroom, in a church service, or even just online, you can create kind of, you know, expectations about how we treat each other. I mean, one of the things I found really interesting in my early research is these email communities had kind of certain rules about, you know, how you write your posts, what kind of language you would use, what was seen as positive or negative kind of, you know, joking in the group. And if people didn't live to those expectations, they kind of seem like, well, if you're in this group, you're a Baptist or you're Episcopalian or you're at least a Christian. So there should be certain behavior norms that you behave to. And we as a group have set out these rules. And so, you know, when people, they were very good at policing themselves. It's like, and if somebody came in and was doing something, yeah, you know, that was, they saw as problematic or especially not ethical, or treating someone badly, they, you know, would often, you know, call that person out or, you know, kind of have them ask the moderator to step in. And I think, you know, again, it's because, you know, you can't see people, you know, if you don't speak, you're not present online in many contexts. Now that's changing now with, you know, a lot of the visual software we have, but so it forces you to be more open and set boundaries about what communication is expected and how you're expected to behave. We often don't have those same boundaries put out so clearly in offline spaces. We just assume a lot of things. So I think, you know, these digital spaces, when it limits like one aspect of our senses, whether it's sight or whether it's touch, you know, we create compensations like emoticons. We create kind of certain kind of behavior rules to try to bypass or try to fill that gap. And I think in some ways it causes people to think more authentically or in more creative ways. And so that, you know, those, again, a lot of things get lost in the assumptions of how we do church and what we think church is. Like, we think if we gather in the same building, we have community. And that's definitely not the case. You know, so I think, you know, the online environment is causing people to rethink that in good ways and in challenging ways.
Thank you. That was helpful. I'm going to switch a little bit, but it's still sort of in the same vein. I'm going back to a comment you sort of made earlier during our conversation about when you were in Germany, you were watching multiple sort of services on Facebook. And I've heard this from other individuals who have typically gone to their particular church service on Sunday, and that's it. But since the pandemic, they've been able to watch multiple services, even services that are different from their service because they're at home now. Do you think this will be something that continues when as we go along, or do you think that people simply fall back into their old traditional ways when they're able to fully participate again in their own congregation?
I think it, you know, it depends on the people. You know, the Pew American Life Project on Religion brought out some interesting statistics in the fall, 2019, that, you know, that the fastest rising groups of spiritual seekers are, you know, the nuns, people that are spiritual but don't affiliate with a certain group, or what is becoming the duns, people that kind of still say, I'm a Christian. They might even say, oh, I'm a Christian from the Methodist tradition, or I'm Episcopalian, but they're kind of done with the institution of church. So I think, you know, the Barna Research Institute brought out some interesting data to say that there's a lot of kind of drift off, that people, like only 40% of people that would go to church have actually been logging on to their church services online. A large percentage of people are also kind of looking at other churches online. And I think it's given an excuse for people like the Duns that they were looking for a reason to kind of check out, and this has it. I think also people are looking at other spaces, you know, It could be because while they are looking for a little bit more flashier presented, you know, kind of experience, or maybe they're like, you know, hey, I've always heard about this church down the road and I just want to check it out. So I think we're going to see a lot of, a flow between churches. And I think we'll see people that are going to drift off from church. And I think there'll be other people that, you know, the tradition, the offline tradition is so important that they're just going to go back to that. And that's just what they're happy with. And that's what they want. But I think we're going to see it's not just one trend, but multiple interesting trends happening in the next 6 months to a year, or whenever the pandemic, you know, we can say it's finally kind of over.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it will be multiple. And, you know, I'm not sure we'll ever say it's over for quite a while. So this could be interesting. I'm curious, and you sort of have hinted at this in a couple of your responses, but what do you think the limitations are to sort of online community?
Well, I think one of it is people assume like, oh, well, we have a Facebook group and we live stream our service, and there's ability to have comments, so we have community. You know, just as that's a false assumption, just as the same assuming that you're in a room with a group of people, you have community. So, you know, it's community is about, you know, again, relationship, interaction. It's about the mission and values of the church being lived out in a tangible, concrete way. So I think, you know, one of the challenges is that kind of finding out, putting your service online doesn't create community. You have to be intentional about it. So how do you use, you know, Facebook or versus YouTube? How do you kind of use the comments as a way to kind of encourage, exchanges and not just getting people that are kind of coming in and, you know, kind of saying negative or, inappropriate things. Looking at like the example I was giving of the pastor of like thinking through how do I redo my sermon and create like a opportunity that allows people to engage in these small groups. So I think, you know, the challenge is that you're using stuff out of the box doesn't usually work. Or I've seen a lot of apps that are geared at businesses or education. They're saying, oh, if we just do this, then you're going to have that community. You're going to have that interaction. Just because you're sharing information doesn't mean you have community. If people don't feel cared for, if they don't feel loved, if they don't feel like they can share and connect with people on like values, and if they don't feel like, again, like that cheers, that people know their name and they're glad they're there, you don't have community. And I think we put more focus on, as a church, in the church, about proximity as community versus communication and relationship as community.
And I like that language of proximity versus communication. I think that's really helpful. As we get ready to bring this to a close, Heidi, I would like to hear your reflection on where do you think we're going to go from here in terms of what church community looks like? I know you said it's going to play out in multiple ways, but do you think we're going to see sort of more dedication by particularly church leaders to maintaining some sort of online presence, or do you think slowly we're just going to erode back to sort of our traditional ways of thinking about church?
Well, I've seen a couple interesting trends. One is, and I write about this in my essay in The Distant Church, there's kind of three dominant strategies I saw in the first 6 weeks of how people were using internet technology to put their church online. The first was a transfer strategy where people were just trying to get their services online very practically and just finding the technology best to do that. Then the second strategy was kind of the transfer translate and saying, okay, what does the technology do well? You know, like how could we maybe like, you know, again, the pastor that kind of eliminated parts of the service to focus the time and people's attention on, you know, the elements that they felt were most important, maybe turning the church service into like a, you know, conversation, like a fireside chat or a talk show versus, you know, a formal service to kind of create that sense of kind of connection with people. And the last strategy was transformation, where people both understood what the technology does well, as well as what their identity was and what they wanted people to have out of the church experience, and then kind of began to reflect on how do we kind of change both our what we do practically, as well as kind of maybe our theological understanding. So during the early days, there wasn't very many people in this doing this transformational strategy, but I've seen a lot of people, again, experimenting, because they've seen, oh, this really worked. Oh, hey, we had a lot of good feedback after we did this with small groups, or we did this, or we had, you know, we asked everyone to email in, you know, their prayer requests, and then we did this. So I think that those churches that were willing to experiment and go outside the box, we're going to see a transformation that will impact not just what is done possibly digitally, but also how trying to bring those things that worked online in back into the offline environment. I think another thing that we're going to be seeing, and that's a challenge, is you know, just because the technology, you know, using technology doesn't afford afford community. A lot of people are realizing that once I put my content online, it's about a lack of control. And I think the kind of, you know, the idea of kind of churches being hierarchical or focused around, especially the celebrity pastor, you know, it's a kind of a really hierarchical ordered structure. And like churches that are willing to be these, what people are calling the disruptors, or being willing to be disrupted and deal with the chaos and deal with the messiness of life in church, both in online and offline, I think those are the ones that are going to kind of be able to kind of make a good connection between the offline and the online, and try to create a nice bridge. And I think, you know, a lot of churches I've heard say, oh, you know, we're definitely going to keep doing online church because, you know, we're getting so many more people attending, or at least clicking on their service. You know, just because they clicked on, they had this many views, doesn't mean that many people actually came or watched the whole service. But they're seeing a lot more people, you know, viewing. And so seeing that, wow, a digital strategy is actually important. Like, it can reach out to people, and it can be, you know, but thinking at it maybe as the digital as a gateway to get them into the community, whether it's through mediated interactions in digital media or offline, I think that will become really important. And I think churches that are willing to kind of make those connections, not just broadcasting like a TV service, but kind of see how can we actually create so we have the seamless connection, whether the people are online or offline, they're part of the community. They feel, you know, they feel loved and cared for, and they feel that they're growing in their faith because of it. I think these new kind of strategies between the online and offline could be really interesting for the church.
Heidi, thank you so much for taking time today to have this conversation. And again, just want to lift up how wonderful this free resource is. And I hope that our listeners will take advantage of it and download it. And thank you for all your good work in this area.
Thank you for having me again.
On the next Leading Ideas Talks, we speak with New Testament professor Shively Smith about innovative approaches to teaching the gospel that disrupt our staid and familiar notions of the biblical text.
So how do we preach in a way that ignites in people a curiosity to go back and revisit a biblical passage and to see different people, different experiences with this passage in a real way? So I see preaching in many ways as a different rhetorical moment, but yet with the same goal that I'm trying to achieve in class, which is less about the banking system, depositing into students more information, more about getting them curious to go and explore and ask more questions, to be courageous enough to ask more questions of our biblical text, of our interpretive products, and of our faith and of ourselves. To me, that is the embodiment of what preaching can and should be doing right now, particularly as we are turning to the scriptures and resourcing it as a way to have conversations that our communities need.
Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.